The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, Fade to Gray family? This is Chris, and I want to talk to you about something we've been telling you about all season long, and that's Brian from BoundlessFinancialSolutions.com. He can help you set up a budget, learn how to invest your money, and even help you understand your retirement. And they don't just work with individuals. They work with businesses and nonprofits as well. What's awesome is that they're never going to cold call you or spam your email. You tell them your needs, your hopes, and dreams, and they will provide you with their best options at your convenience. Listeners of Fade to Gray can call 413-977-9967 and ask for Brian, or you can email him directly at brian@bfs-team.com. And that's Brian with an I. And mention the podcast to receive a free consultation. That's hundreds of dollars in value. Services are available where licensed. Look, you have no excuse not to get your finances in order. Visit BoundlessFinancialSolutions.com and let them remove your financial fears today.
Ladies and idiots,
this is the Fade to Gray podcast.
Everything will be aces.
Let's get Fade to Gray.
Hell yeah.
He has many, and I mean many, leather-bound books on shelves made of rich mahogany.
Now, you've heard of gay conversion therapy. Well, this is gray conversion therapy.
I think you're gonna like it.
I'm not braver than you. I'm just drunker than you.
And you're fabulous. You deserve to be told you're fabulous.
What do you think about the podcast?
It sucks.
Nice.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Fade to Gray. We've got Omar, Seth, and me, Andy, here at the roundtable today. We are joined by, I would say, the world's most renegade creative, also known as maybe the most... Let me finish. Let me shower you with accolades first. He's got the thickest booty in all of the BC universe.
That one's
His
true.
Name is James Whiteman. Welcome, James Whiteman.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ow!
Brr, brr, brr.
Ow!
And so when you say biggest booty in the BC universe, was that like...
proportionate to like the rest of my body, I would say.
Are we saying BC is a black cock universe? I wasn't sure what we're doing here.
let's call it the bad Christian universe. Let's play it safe. Let's play it safe. Yeah.
Nice video mic, Andy.
Oh, do you like that? It's a Rode. It's a Rode directional mic.
That's amazing.
That's some background to all of our listeners. I record
that's
on
frugal audio.
Dude, I'm telling you, I don't want to spend any extra money if I don't have to on this podcast.
That's not a bad idea. I might try and do that next time I'm on a podcast.
You know, and all you got to do is grab your external recorder and plug it right in, and cool. It works.
I'm already learning something on here.
That's
well,
right.
The first thing we're going to do, other than, first thing, if you guys start trying to start a podcast out there and you have a really nice mic for your camera already, just use that because Andy comes through with some of the best audio.
Podcast anyway. Tech right there. And you can hear my voice crackling even better on this mic.
I just conned myself into thousands of dollars worth of audio set up in here without having to do anything.
Dude, yeah.
See,
all you have to
awesome.
Do is get
where are you at right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan's been
welcome
on the podcast,
James.
Right?
Yeah, tell the listeners where you're at right now.
I am in Dan Koch's studio in the Seattle area. I think Dan is a friend of the pod, as I'm assuming. Staying with Dan for just a little bit, couch surfing around the Seattle area, and we just went in and had a big breakfast, and then he set me up in his studio.
That's nice, awesome.
Nice. Yeah,
transparency for our listeners, right before we went live, you said, excuse me if I do shit my pants while we're talking.
Yeah, so, I'm going to try not to shit my pants.
Exactly. So James and his giant peaches, we have...
Juicy J.
We kind of...
J with a delicious booty.
We like nicknames, and especially for you, because you're one of our favorite people. At least you're one of my favorite people.
Oh,
so what is your favorite nickname that somebody has ever bestowed upon you?
Well, favorite is a weird descriptor term. I mean, the one I was most fond of was maybe the one that was the most, you know, the most used by everybody was jammies. When I was in high school and like early college, people called me jammies.
Would you just wear a onesie everywhere?
I had a bunch in my younger years. Legs was one of them, and I don't remember the origin of that. But then the best one was flames, which was a short derivative of flaming homosexual.
Wow.
And who gave you that nickname, dude?
You know, like if you're, you know, in high school, like you have like some friends that are like kind of like asshole bullies, but also like still kind of your friends because you want to be accepted and you want everyone to like you. So you put up with it.
Yep.
It was like those guys that like were really mean and terrible. But like I had to just deal.
See, that's why my nickname for you is that Juicy J, because you just have so much like swag. It just drips from you. You just have so much sauce. It just drips. So was it because your friends just, they couldn't handle
sweat,
all the sauce?
Not sauce, it's sweat. Sweat and beer.
It's a good combination.
Sweat and beer. I like that. So James,
I'm just a sweaty guy.
We brought you here today because you're probably, I don't know, one of the...
The most important person that's ever been on this podcast.
I would say it definitely you're way more important than Joey Svensson, for sure.
Just
way
under Barack
more
Obama.
Important. Oh, you're way above
Barack. All the Joey hate, man. I don't know, man.
Has Joey been on here?
Yeah.
I think.
Has he been here? Really?
Maybe. Season one.
Okay, yeah. We actually, I think we did delete that episode, right? Like we talked about? So no, but you're a standout dude to us because we know you from kind of like the Bad Christian universe. We kind of started our podcast because of that whole deal. I wouldn't say because of it, but we were inspired. But you got hooked up with them somehow, some way, through all of your hard work. Some random punk rock kid from Chicago. So
originally from small town Nebraska.
Oh, really?
Oh, no kidding?
Yeah.
That actually makes it way more interesting for me. Because
12 kids in my graduating class of high school.
Wow. Dude, how does a kid from 12 graduating seniors go to making a documentary for Emory? Where does that even start? Were you at local shows with a camera? What the hell even happened? How does that begin?
It's a good question that I don't actually really know the answer to, because I think about it all the time. Like, how did I get so lucky? Because I never had a thought of, you know, something bigger. It wasn't like a cliche, like, movie, you know, like, what's that Jake Gyllenhaal movie with when they launched rockets?
Oh, October Sky
or whatever. Yeah. It wasn't like that, you know, like that internal, like, oh, I'm going to get out of this town, like, I need to escape kind of a thing. I never even had that thought. I think it was just like I wanted to do something different and exciting, and I found out about a house in Atlanta that was like an incubator, like communal living house for Christian freelance filmmakers. And the guy that ran it was actually at the conference, if you guys saw him. His name is Isaac Dietz, and he used to do videos for Family Force 5. He's done music videos for Lecrae, a lot of different people. But I knew who he was, and I found out that he was running this house for you know, kids that were kind of like me, that were coming from nothing and didn't know what they wanted to do or where they wanted to get to, but needed some kind of a shortcut or like a leg up or a, you know, mentorship or just a community that could kind of steer them in the right direction. And I just kind of didn't have anything better to do, so I just moved to Atlanta and I did that. And that was, I mean, more or less the chapter break or act two of life.
Were you working on video at that time already? Were you deep into video, or were you doing something else creative?
Not before I moved. I had done a few things just for fun. Like, I'd edited some like Nebraska football videos just because I thought it'd be interesting and like a fun, you know, hobby.
Some highlight reels or something?
Yeah. So I'd done like a few small things just like, you know, like you make like videos with your friends, you know, like just filming people doing stupid shit in the backyard and stuff like that.
So was it a faith-based thing then?
Like, it was. I mean, it was loose. It was, you know, there was a lot of freedom, but it was the pillars of that house were faith, film, and friendship.
Okay. So which part of it was what drew you there the most then, would you say? Out of the faith or the film or the friendship, which one was it that you'd say?
I think it's just like the vibe. The like, you know, I'm actually kind of starting, I'm going to do something similar back in Atlanta, like in May. So I'm moving back there and starting a, you know, kind it's of creative house of my own. But I think it's just the, like, people living an unorthodox life together and having, like, camaraderie and community of, like, breaking the rules and not being a part of the stuff that, you know, kind of sucks people dry in the world. Like, not having 9-to-5, but having a community of people that don't have a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like the conference. It's sure. Like everyone's in this weird little world that feels like an escape, but we're all in it together, and we're all, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's just a bond. It's a bond that you get from,
and everybody shares house responsibilities. Yeah, type of a thing.
Yep, everyone's just in it together.
Responsibility that way, and then you have a lot more time to focus on whatever studies it is, and really devote your time, your craft to the art.
Yep,
it's really good for like art type societies.
I am obsessed with communal creativity, and it doesn't have to be just living in a house, but all I want to do is just make cool shit with my friends, you know, like for the rest of my life. That's the only thing I really care about.
And you get that opportunity. I mean, that's awesome with what you're doing now with What Would Jesus Sell documentary. Mm-hmm. That, you know, which since I'm bringing it up, shout out to one of our Patreon supporters, George. We were talking earlier. We're like, hey, yeah, we got James on. Does anybody have any questions? And you know who George is.
George Barahona.
Barnanova.
Yes, sir.
I do know he's George.
Like, he's butchered that name.
George Barracuda. Georgie Bahama.
Barnes and Nova.
George Barnes and Noble.
So anyway, he wants to know, and I think it's almost the exact quote, like, when the fuck he's going to get his movie? He said after investing a year ago. But
well, here's an inside scoop. What Would Jesus Sell actually belongs to George Barnes and Casanova. He wow. owns 100% of all the rights and all the money. No one knows this. This is an exclusive.
So your main producer wants to know what the fuck's going on with his movie then.
Well, yeah, we can talk about the doc. Actually, the reason I'm in Seattle is just to work on this project. We did a lot of work over the summer and then had to take a break because and this is not a complaint at all, but I'm yet to make a single dollar from working on this and, you know, need to pay my bills. So through the fall, I had to just kind of put that on the back burner so I could just work on stuff to survive, and actually just kind of really fortunately fell into a nice position with a temporary job for a few months that paid me enough to have some savings and be able to turn down other stuff going forward. But anyways, as soon as I got here, that's pretty much all I've been doing for the most part. And I'm in the office with Matt Carter every day, and we've been going through tape. We've added some producers on that are going to help with various roles for the project, and as far as when it's going to be out,
I mean yeah, it's a lot of work.
That's a grand mystery.
Obviously
yeah. That's a really weird mystery. I'm not even thinking about it because all we can think about right now is what the next step is in front of us, because it's such a big project. Mm-hmm. But you know, even when we have a rough cut or even maybe a final cut, it could still be another year and a half until it's actually publicly released, because, you know, you have film festival circuit, you try and get distribution, you know, and I don't even know about how most of those things work very well. We have other people that are involved that, you know how to do like the festival circuit and how to like, you know, have someone pay for your project and stuff like that. But anyways, it'll be a long time, I imagine, until there's a, you know, something you could buy on iTunes or buy a Blu-ray of or whatever. But anyone that backed it, you know, we'll be posting updates. Anyone that backed at a certain level, I think, has like, you know, invites to screenings that we'll do in the future. But I have no idea when it's coming out. The only thing I can promise is I wasn't expecting
an actual answer, and you gave me a very.
I was hoping for a go to hell, George.
I appreciate it. Exactly. Like, screw you, buddy. But no, I think that, like, it sounds like there's a whole lot of work, but it also has to be a lot of fun, too. I mean,
yeah, it's great.
This film, talking to these bands and, like, going through all this stuff.
It's really, like, my dream project at this point in my life, and my dream project that is 3+ years in the making. So it's
wow,
been, you know,
3 years?
Well, we did all the stuff that was in the trailer we shot in March of 2016.
Really?
So I came up with the idea in February of 2016.
This documentary is your idea?
Yeah.
Bro.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why, yeah. I knew that. That's why I have mad respect for what you're doing. And I know that, like, a lot of, like, documentaries take, like, years, like, sometimes, like, 10 years to make.
Yeah.
You know? But it's worth it because you're compiling all of the footage. You're not just rushing through, like, trying to slap things together and put it out there. But
yeah.
It's like, you know.
I mean, we've already got, like, 25 hours of tape.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll probably get another 25. And it's, you know, it's for a maybe hour and a half long project. So it's, like. It's the art of curation.
What does that look like when you bring that to Matt or whoever else, maybe somebody else, maybe even Matt McDonald? I don't know who you pitched that to first. What does that look like? How do you go from it being an idea in your head to getting the cojones to say, I'm just going to spitball this idea with them and see if they're into it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's actually a somewhat funny story. I came up with the idea because Emery was playing this music festival in Dallas called So What Fest, which is like a kind of a Warped Tour-esque, like, 2-day thing at a baseball park in Dallas. You know, lots of hardcore bands, lots of pop punk bands and stuff. And I really wanted to go. And I was trying to figure out, what can I do to get Emery to pay for me to go to this festival? Because I wasn't making any money. And I really needed, you know, like, the only way I was going to be able to make it was if they paid for me to come. And that's literally how I came up with the idea for this documentary.
I love that. Typical creative person. Like, how can I use my skill to get something?
It started so selfish. It started so selfishly. Like, I didn't care about anything other than, like, I just want to go to that fest because it seems amazing. Oh, it was also under a second show back. So I was I have to go. I have to be there. And I was
Did you make it happen?
I need to come up with a project or a pitch or something that I can give to them where they'll be like, yeah, sure, we'll pay for you to come or whatever. So that was, like, the impetus of, like, thinking about this idea. But then it did quickly morph into, like, oh, wait a second. This actually could be something really, really cool. And
was that before you got to the festival, or did you think it could be something cool at the festival?
No, that was just an internal thought for a few days or something like that. But then when I did start thinking about this, it just made so much sense because, like, you know, I grew up in this world as a consumer and loved everything about it. And these guys, you know, grew up playing in it and I've grown out of it, but, like, it's something that I, you know, am familiar with very closely. It's something these guys are familiar with very closely. And Bad Christian has a platform that prides itself on, like, honest conversation and, like, you know, getting to the real meat of an issue. So I was like, who else would be better to do this? Like, it didn't feel pretentious, but it was almost like, if we're not going to do it, then no one will, because, like, who else would want to? We're the perfect.
So divine intervention, you'd say.
Maybe it's a total God thing, you know?
Well, I mean, that's my question. I mean, as you've been working on this, compiling all this footage, I mean, what would you sell for those who don't know? I mean, it's going to be in the show notes, the links and everything, but, like, it's basically, actually, you explained to us exactly what is this documentary about before I asked my question.
The tagline is exploring the intersection of art, faith, and profit. So it's about Christian music, and it's just it's a dive into the history and the goofiness and the struggle and the commerce and all the elements of the business of Christian music.
So seeing all this and immersing yourself in it, you said about 25 hours of footage now, going to get about 25 hours more. And with what you explained, the little bit that you did about your kind of cult-like experience, your communal living, faith experience, how has all of that shaped your faith now and what you believe? And basically, as you've been listening to these different stories, seeing the behind-the-scenes look.
Yeah, seeing the dirty, like, nitty-gritty, yeah, for sure. I'm sure that's changed a lot.
How's that like shaped who you are and how you look at like God and Christianity?
I think it's mostly... It's a tough question that I don't have a very insightful answer to, I don't think, but I think it mostly has given me like peace that there's nothing wrong with like with my experience of frustration with Christian faith, because all of my peers and all of my heroes, like once I've gotten to know them, have gone through the same thing and have kind of paved the way for me to be able to do that. So that's, you know, that's true of the guys in Emory. That's true of a lot of people that, you know, were in bands that I listened to as a kid, or like that are still in bands, you know, that I've interviewed for this, or like just interacted with in some other capacity in the music industry. But I think the biggest thing is it's given me a, you know, a safety and a connective tissue with people that I really respect and trust as, you know, people of integrity or of principle or whatever, being like, oh yeah, they also are a little jaded, a little frustrated, a little, you know, burnt out on trying to die this, you know, emotional dive or whatever element of it is.
So kind of like a sense of hope with a community, like you found community, like-minded people.
Yes.
Does it almost solidify? You said it makes you feel like you're okay.
It's like, oh, I'm not yourself. The only one. Okay, cool, awesome. That's really good to know.
What does that do to your faith, though? Does it kind of make you more secure? Give you more peace about even what you believe? Like that?
No, I don't know anything about what I believe anymore. I mean, I still call myself a Christian.
It's confused me that people love me.
Yeah. I still consider myself a Christian, but I also. I'm also running away from spirituality to some degree, because it's like, it's a little messy and it's a little like, you know, I was like, man, I put in 100,000 hours into this thing already. And then I ended up at this place that doesn't make any sense. Like, why do I want to keep doing this? It's like frustrating.
And are you using the if you put in 100,000 hours or whatever to something, then you'll be an expert at it, or you'll be whatever at it. You'll be, you know, hands down, you'll be secure in it, because putting in that much time and then and having it kind of blow up in your face or have you realize something, you're just like, well, yeah, exactly. What the hell was that all about? Look at all the years I've wasted. But yeah. Something good comes from it. Community.
Sometimes it's hard to. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's tough to not feel like I wasted my time and that was like a huge mistake, but I don't feel that way.
I mean, what was the catalyst to make you start questioning to begin with? Like, I mean, it sounds like you were questioning before you even started the documentary. So
I've always been that guy. I've never been able to help it. I've always been like, okay, but what about this? You know, I've always been the devil's advocate, status quo challenger. I've just never fit in, and I've tried to play that game, and I've tried to be someone I wasn't in a lot of different contexts in my life, like in high school and college and, you know, young adulthood and stuff. But I, deep down, I've always been the one that's like, no, this doesn't make any sense to me. And I mean, the way you test the strength of something is you put as much force against it as possible. That's always been my, you know, mentality with any kind of thought in the world. Like, does this hold up? Let's see. Like, what's all the arguments against it? I'm going to embrace those. I'm going to wear them. I'm going to push against it. I'm going to see if it lasts or not. And most things haven't. Most versions of Christianity that I've experienced haven't stood up to the fourth set of relentless, you know, criticism. And
what was that first experience where you were told to kind of, do you remember that experience where you were kind of told to be quiet, don't ask that, or, you know, that's too in-depth of a question, or you're not supposed to ask that? What does that first time look like for you when you're younger?
I don't think it was ever that explicit. It was always just like a passive social shunning. Mm. Like, it wasn't anything anyone ever said to me. It was just like an intuition of like, I know that I'm not allowed to do this.
But that's what makes you want to do it even more.
I can just tell. Yeah. But I also just am kind of a coward and I don't have the guts a lot of the time.
Like, they were more annoyed of the question than they were like shunning you. They were just like
yeah.
Why
I don't,
are you
yeah,
even asking
I don't know
this?
What the first yeah. time, I don't know what the first time was. I do remember one time sitting at like a lunch table in the cafeteria in college. And people were talking about like prostitution or like sex slavery or something like that. And I didn't have any belief or a position, but I brought up a hypothetical of like, would it, you know, like, would there be value in legalizing prostitution? And I swear to God, this girl sitting across the table from me dropped her fork. It was like a movie. It was like, you know, it just makes this like clanging sound. Like,
mouth
like
wide open. Yes.
Yeah, and I was like, what?
And here's and little like James just trying to do a thought experiment at the lunch table.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, okay.
Now, was that because you went to a private school?
No, it was a public school, but it was small town Midwest, yeah. So it was very, very big Christian dynamic.
Yeah, you said you were born and raised in Nebraska, right? All right.
Yep.
Northwest Missouri here, so, you know.
Okay.
I can identify with that.
A little bit less teeth and a little bit less corn.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A little bit more mountains.
See, that's such a different. It's so weird because when I got into this whole like BC universe, whatever, blah blah blah, I felt like it was a lot of Midwest and Southern people rebelling against this crazy shit that they saw in church. But here I am raised in California near Sacramento, and I didn't see a whole lot of the things that you guys experience, yet I still had yeah. that distaste and distrust and wanted to ask questions. And I guess I have a similar story to you too. Just you kind of fall into a community of creatives and that's kind of your home. But it is interesting to hear just the stark contrast of even just states and how churches and Christianity function. Like what was there ever a time in your church where you were reprimanded for even staying out late, or like, did you ever play in a worship team and play a wrong chord? Something happened where it's a negative experience. I know I just asked you about, you know, questioning, but was there an experience that just pushed you away from it completely?
Well, I was always so desperate for an us. I was always so desperate for a team to belong to. That's a big part of why I became a mm-hmm. Christian, because it was like the first thing that ever offered me like a, oh, I belong now. So I put up with a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff I would no longer, because I didn't love myself. I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't have a home or a group. But yeah, I mean, I remember, cause I was like super into Reformed theology for a long time, and even went through like some theological training through, some local churches. And, I remember like they were going to kick me out of the program because I wasn't in community enough. Cause I was like, I would like skip like my gospel community meetings like every so often. And like, I didn't like it. It was like boring and stupid and fake to me, but they were going to like just take me out of the program because I wasn't like hanging out with my church crew on a frequent enough
basis.
And
did you conform? Did you start hanging
or like
with
attending
them?
Or like attending?
That had to be hard. Kind of anybody yeah. who's trying to like fit in and like it deals with any rejection issues. That had to have been like,
or social yeah. anxiety. Like yeah, that's almost discriminatory.
Well, it was just everything I did was what caused anxiety. Like anything I did. Cause like it was more that I got reprimanded because I wasn't going to church enough. Like I wasn't at enough Sunday services. Like I'd not go for 2 weeks or whatever. And they'd be like, you need, you know, the reformed Calvinists, like, you need to be in community, bro.
Like, instead of like asking, are you okay? You know, is there anything we can do for you? Maybe you should like talk to somebody on the side. It's like, no, you're out of here because you're not following the rules.
Yeah.
That's right there.
Yeah. There's been a handful of those in my life. When I was working at a church, I got pulled aside actually pretty graciously. But they found out that I was having sex, and they were they were actually great about it. They were like, you know, we just want to know what's going on. Like, we want to help you. Like, you're not in trouble. Like, your job's not in trouble or anything like that. So they actually, like, I respect a lot about the way that they approach that. But also I was like, I don't really care.
What's your personal like, life?
But I think my roommate snitched on me.
I was going to say, did they find out? Because was that the time that I heard about, was it on Skype, we being blackmailed because your pants were down?
No, that was totally different. I was fired from the church when I had the Skype blackmail scandal of 2018.
So this was recent. Okay.
So, oh, it wasn't that long ago.
This is guys, right now, why I you don't send I think it was 2018. So, wait,
let's hear that story. Yeah, we brought up that without having the story explained. So let's hear that.
Well, okay, yeah, it's a very embarrassing story that I tell everybody and probably should tell nobody, but whatever. I mean, it's an open book here. So I made a OkCupid profile. Sometime, I don't remember when this was. I think it was last year sometime, and it was like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm just kind of like wasting time, you know, like you just kind of go through the bullshit. And it's like just pretty mindless. And I had like a mutual like or whatever with a girl on OkCupid. And then she messaged me a few minutes later, like super cute girl. All of her pictures were like professional. Like she's like a model. And she's like, I just moved here from like San Diego or something. We're just like exchanging info for a while.
Exchanging info? And then I'll make the story very brief.
Well, let me, I'll... The
That's
story could be told
with like zeros.
The story
and
could
ones.
Be told very long.
Age, sex,
I'll make it very brief.
Demos.
Which I shouldn't, because if I make it brief, it makes me sound way worse. But just for the sake of brevity, was talking to this girl for a while, and then we started texting, and then she asked if I wanted to Skype, and I did, and she started taking all our clothes off. And like masturbating, and I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was just like, I had no expectations of anything, but I was like, this is sweet. I didn't expect my night to be this cool.
I don't have to log on Pornhub.
Like, this is a win. Yeah. And
saves a step.
And then she, her microphone was broken, so she had to type to me.
Oh, boy.
But then she, you know, she said something along the lines of like, I want, you know, like, I want you to play along or like, you know, whatever. So I didn't want to stop, so I whipped my dick out. And then the video, like, you know, so it's like the big video and then the little video is yours. The big video switched to my little video. So it's just my dick in my face. and then it
I've never gone soft that fast.
And then it froze. God, I hope my mom doesn't listen to this podcast.
Hi, Mrs. White.
And then it froze.
That's a common statement that's made.
Yeah. And then it just froze. And then I saw a mouse cursor show up on the screen and go up into the corner, and it went file, save video as, and I was like, oh my God. And then they minimized that. And then, cause it's like, their desktop, and then they opened up Chrome, and then they went to Facebook, and somehow they found my Facebook profile. And then they opened up the tabs of like my 9 friends and the little thing, like sidebar grid thing. They opened up all their profiles. They saved my profile picture and my cover photo and tried to make a burner Facebook account with my name and pictures. And then they started typing to me on Skype. Now I have this video of you and you need to pay me money, or I'm going to send this to all of your friends and family.
Wow.
What I want to know is how much money was it?
I just got... Well, okay. That's another funny part of it, because... I was trying to, well, I said that and I immediately started doing Google searches and I like frantically like, and I deactivated my social media and like my brain just went like immediately like, okay, what do I do? Like, what's the process? Like, you know, okay, now what do we, like, what's the plan? And then I tried to talk to him and like play it cool And I think like the first thing I said was like LOL or something, like, you know, trying to act send tough him a meme. And like, you can't get me. Like, go ahead. Go the fuck
I'm
ahead.
Lesser
I don't
James.
Care. You can do whatever you want. Yeah. But then they were like, you know, like, yo, you think I'm lying, whatever. So I was like, okay, how much money do you want? And they said $700, I think, $800. And then I said, okay, well, if you have my Facebook open, you can look and see what I do for work. I'm a freelance filmmaker. So that means I have $3 in my bank account.
That's like some guy getting a hostage and saying, like, I will kill you. It's like, dude, do you not know that I'm nobody? Like, you can do whatever you want. Right. Have fun with it. It's fine. Have the $3.
Yeah, well, like, imagine, what's the worst profession of person that you could hold for ransom?
A 2019 creative.
Yeah.
So what happened? So, like, they're asking you for money. You have no money. So were they trying to bargain? Yeah. Were you trying to bargain with them? They're trying to bargain with you at this point? Was that...
I was just trying to keep them talking while I was, you know, finding results on Google from, like, what to do. And basically, it's just a scam that people in, like, the Philippines will do.
It's pretty common.
And if you... Yeah, it's happened a ton. There's
happened
like
to Andy last
message
week,
boards
so.
And Reddit,
God, I wish.
Reddit subs. And
I would gladly pay $700 for that.
But basically, if you don't take the bait, then they just move on because they have 40 other people to try and do this to. They don't waste any time if you don't buy in right away. But
so nobody found out, so then you decided to go on podcast and tell everybody about it.
Well, another thing that was – okay, so this will give you – I mean, me talking about it now is one example of my lack of decorum. But another will be like I immediately like deactivated my Facebook and everything. But then I also immediately texted like a dozen of my friends like, hey, this thing happened. There's a video of me with a dick out. Like, be on the lookout.
I'm famous.
Like, I could have just taken the gamble and like, you know, assumed that no one would actually see it. Instead, I just voluntarily told a dozen
like,
people.
Hey, man, I got this text from you at like 3-4 in the morning. Just wondering what that was all about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Some guy from the Philippines got a hold of my phone.
No, that was pretty much like exactly what the response was from a lot of people. It was like my brother and like my ex-girlfriend who I was like really good friends with still. And, you know, people that I knew I could trust and like wouldn't shame me.
Nice.
Thank God I was not working at the church at the time because I probably would have died from the anxiety and fear of
I'm sure
that scenario if I was still working at the church.
So are you still on OkCupid?
So yeah. I am, but now I know how to spot those scammers. And I still get those messages sometimes, and then I just troll them and I just waste their time. And I'll get it all the way to like they'll add me on Skype and I'll be like, "Okay, yeah, let's go for it." And then they'll start a video and I'll be like, "Oh, you're cute. Can you wave?" And then they'll stop the video and then they'll start a new video of somebody else. Like, it's not a real video.
Like, that didn't just happen. Oops.
Isn't it crazy how much work goes into scams sometimes? You're like, some chick had to pre-record this video. How much did they pay her? Probably $30. And now they're getting $800 off of this video? Like,
do you think people actually pay, though?
It's like one guy with, like, many servers just, like, basically bought. And it's some bot at this point that's just taking it.
Sure. Probably, yeah. It's like really fun. Like, I mean, I'm wasting my own time too, but it gives me satisfaction to waste theirs. Where like I'll be like, "Oh, can you wave at me?" And then they'll like stop the video and they'll start it again and it's someone else. And I'll be like, "Oh, could you like write like hi James on a piece of like stop?" And, you know, it's like just I could just keep them going for hours, and I feel like I'm doing my part for my fellow man because the more time I'm wasting for them, the less time they can get some other suckers.
Yeah, and the more they get scared, the more they're like, "I don't know if I should."
So
do
it's
this
just
anymore.
Altruism.
You're basically a hero, so we all should be thanking you right now.
Yeah. Well, if you spend your life never being blackmailed with a video of your dick, you're welcome.
And so I guess you should probably teach all of us, like, basically how to spot these bots. You know, to save other people from being
humiliated.
Ooh,
that's a good idea.
And stress and anxiety.
Well. I mean, if the language doesn't seem like what I originally took as, just being kind of dumb was more like, not like, English as secondary language, like not a great command of English. But it's mostly just the like the Skype.
Like, is
thing.
You horny?
Like, if you ever Skype, if you ever Skype with someone you don't know on the internet, make sure that the video is actually of them. Like, make them prove it by writing something down or something like that.
So, isn't that crazy that you can be got by a video in 2019? Like, as much as you're a creative with Photoshop and all of that, dude.
Yeah, well, I was more embarrassed about the fact that, like, I fell for it. Like, I was more embarrassed about that than, like, having my dick out. Because I was like, I should have seen this coming. Like, what? How did they get me? And the thing that suckered me was the girl in the Skype video was the same girl in the pictures. And so I was like, oh, of course it's a you know, a real person. Like, that was my, like, I had a little bit of skepticism, but I was like, okay, but if I start Skyping with her, then, and it's the same girl, then, like, okay, yeah. And then we started, and she, like, you know, it's the same girl, and then she just, like, kind of had, like, a little smile and, like, waved and stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, so it's a real person.
Wow, that's crazy, because you would think that the scammers, whatever, you would think that they would not put that much time into actually making sure it's consistency, same chick, all that sort of stuff. Like, you would just be,
it was
because most dudes,
I got,
and you're probably one of the smarter ones. Seth said, does that actually work? Of course it does. I mean, like, they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't, because there's guys who like paying ladies online. They will literally, there's things they like, they call them like pay dudes, or I don't know what the term is, but it's these rich guys, they get off on literally pay sending dudes. Money to these random chicks. So
the pay dudes.
Yeah, the hashtag the pay dudes.
They're called daddies, okay?
Did you say daddies or fatties?
Daddies.
Well, they're probably also fatties, but hey, I'm not discriminating. To each his own. But
I want to start a website that's, you know, seekingarrangement.com. It's like a sugar daddy website. Like, old rich dudes can, like, pay women to, like, go out with them.
And you just charge them a certain percentage to host the website. That's actually kind of genius.
Well, I want to make a website like that, like a sugar daddy website, but for freelancers.
Yes, yes. It's like a dirty Fiverr.
Yeah.
Like Fiverr after dark.
That'd be amazing. Yes.
I do like that. So before we get off here, I want
to
know.
Anything else to promote?
I do want to know. What is
it's huge.
Thank you. I could have just referenced the Black Man video for that, I guess, but I want to know. Yeah. Is there
link in the show notes?
Link in the show notes. I like that. Yeah, bit.ly. I just want to know what has been the most hair pulling out experience of working with Matt Carter.
You mean besides like the entirety of
yes
it.
Besides everything, name something specifically.
Like, you want a specific one? Not, I can't just say like, oh, it's that is just what it is by its nature.
Is it the fact that he puts out that he's a genius and he's not, or what is it exactly?
That's a good question. Carter and I are actually pretty similar in a lot of ways, which makes it
there
even more
go.
Frustrating for me
James.
Because I generally don't like people that are like me. But I think that it's just like getting him to pay attention, like, because he'll get so like it's he will trick you, and kind of himself too, but he'll trick you into like genuine excitement for something, but then it lasts for like maybe 48 hours, and then you're lucky if you can get him excited about it again in like the next 3 years in the case of this documentary.
And then he'll come to you 8 months later and say, hey man, how about that thing, blah blah blah. You're like, well, we haven't talked about it since then. He's like, well, did you finish it, how's it going? And you're like, dude, we just
Matt runs on enthusiasm as his main you know thing, that his main skill, which I respect a lot, and that's I'm pretty similar in that regard, but like he does so many things and he's so spread thin, and his enthusiasm is infectious, but then he goes on to something else, but you didn't go on with him. So then you're just kind of like, hey, do you have time to talk about this thing that you said we were going to do? I literally spent almost 2 years trying to figure out, like, if this documentary was ever going to happen, if we were ever going to do a Kickstarter. There was a rough cut of the trailer done, I think, in June of 2016. And then we did the Kickstarter in March or April of 2018. So almost 2 years of, like, hey, when are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? When's a good time? Hey, can we talk? Like, I haven't heard from you. So it's been a long road, but
he's a busy, the good thing is man.
Right now,
well, he's busy creating that Matt life that he likes to live. You know, I'm just all about creating that lifestyle that I like to live, you know, creating my own destiny.
But right now Matt is pumped on the dock. So that's why I'm here. And that's why I'm leveraging every second that I'm in Seattle, because he is excited.
Awesome. We're very excited. I can't wait to see it.
Too. It feels a lot better right now than it did a week ago, just cause like we've, you know, we dove in and we're through, you know, X amount of hours of tape, and we're coming up with ideas, and like we have a story, and you know, like it just feels good. Feels like, oh yeah, we're doing it. We're in it. We're in
you
the
feel
mud
good
now.
Man. Juicy J, it's been great talking to you. Seriously, you've been a lot of fun. Been very open sharing. We learned a lot today, I could say. You probably saved some guy
just put my name on the episode as Juicy J and not James Whiteman, so that it doesn't come up in Google searches and ruin my future career prospects.
Well, anything you do want to promote while you're here, other than obviously you're working on the doc again, super excited about that. That's moving forward, but any
and that's
personal
is it wwjs.film, James?
Yeah, that's just a landing page, splash page that will take you to the Kickstarter. But that's an easy URL. I don't know what the Kickstarter URL is.
So what else you want to promote?
Your next project's in Atlanta, I know. And so,
if you're in the Atlanta area, you can try and find me on social or whatever. Keep a lookout, because we're going to be starting a co-living, co-working, creative house space with a, you know, venue, events,
sex cult
community. Nice. Yeah.
Is everyone welcome? Like, of any backgrounds and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
You have to send a video, a Skype video in to be.
What's your Skype name? It's not a specific film thing, and it's not a specific Christian thing.
James,
it's just
would you accept a Trump voter?
Creativity. I would accept anybody, man. Most of my family is Trump voters.
Yeah. Especially down there, you're going to get a lot of that.
Cool. There you go. I'm trying to think of actual plugs. We'll have an episode coming out on Bad Christians soon with me and Justice Stout, who runs a nonprofit that has partnered with us in the making of the doc.
Very cool.
And they're trying to do some fundraising on our behalf. So when that comes out, pay attention to that, because that'll be the start of whatever. I don't exactly know the details of that, but some chance for people to give us their money, which is always
well. It's obviously to a good cause, and you know, What Would Jesus Sell is the documentary again. James, thank you for coming on and giving us the whole scoop on OKCupid, your dick, and all things creative. Man, we really appreciate you coming on our podcast.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you guys so much.
Anytime, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. Tell Dan said. See you soon.
Fade to Gray family, you are no stranger to my boy Chad Johnson, and he knows something that you don't. Because if you're paying too much for your auto, home, life, or small business insurance without having your own agent you can trust to advise you correctly, then you are not living your best life. Insurance agent Chad Johnson has multiple companies to offer in these products and is licensed in Missouri, Illinois, Oklahoma, Kansas, Arkansas, and Iowa. All these places where Tornado Alley is, you know, it's tornado season, you're going to need insurance. Call or text message him at 417-421-2925 for a no obligation quote on any of your insurance needs. Again, call or text message Chad Johnson at 417-421-2925. You've heard him on the podcast. You know he's a great guy. He's going to take care of you. Call him today.